This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive with Em and Warren. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you. Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know, and if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you again. Now, Lauren, today we're going to be talking about why we like to share end-of-year lists. Have you made some end-of-year lists?
I haven't. I used to make one of all the films I saw, but since the pandemic, I haven't been going to the cinema. So I haven't been seeing, you know, I watch television, but I haven't seen, I used to see like 100 films a year, and that's something that's quite changed. So for me, no, that was my one big list, and I haven't done it for a couple of years, but certainly my social media feeds are inundated with these lists, from the Spotify wrap-ups to people's own individual bests list. And all the newspaper and pop culture sites all produce, you know, best albums, best books, best TV shows as a kind of year wrap up.
What's the deal? Why are we obsessed with end of year wrap ups?
Look, I think the first is there's a little bit of bragging to it, in the sense of that if you're able to assemble, let's say, a list of 100 of the best books you've read, well, you've read 100 books, have you? So there's a little bit of a brag there, in the sense of, you know, having consumed a lot and sort of knowing the field, whatever your field might be. That's the sort of, you know, and I'm not sure that I'm being cynical about saying that. There's a bit of a brag to it, but there's also a bit of a connection to others. Did they see the same things or read the same things as you? And did they rank them as highly or lowly as you did? And it's a way to kind of connect with others around shared activities, in the sense that, you know, pop culture is something that connects us to others, and we, you know, we're often consuming the same stuff, but also that idea of sort of taste and how unique our tastes are, perhaps, or how common they are as well.
Do you think that that need to share this information to connect with others is symptomatic that perhaps we're not connecting as community as much as we used to, and therefore we feel that we can pile a list of whatever the data is we want to do and share it, we'll be connected?
It's a bit chicken and an egg, though, isn't it? Because in the sense that we are seeing these lists because we've got the technology to share them, right? So I don't know, for example, in a pre-social media era, did people do this in a notebook and just sort of bring it out at the Christmas table? Probably not. No. Now we're sharing them. But that's that very technology that we're using to share those lists is probably the technology that has driven us a bit further apart as well, in the sense that I think there's less need to socialize as much as we did in the past, because we feel connected all the time. We're feeling like we're socializing all the time. It might not be the kind of socializing that meets all of our needs, hence why we still want to see flesh and blood people and, you know, do the social in-person stuff, but that there is that idea that social media is sort of the cause of these lists, as well as the place that we do them and experience and share them.
But surely the reason that you're sharing the list on your social media is to get a reaction. Like, they literally invented like reactions on Instagram stories and whatnot, so that people can physically, literally react to what you've posted.
Wow.
So is it
like
super like
laughing emoji? No, but you know, like, I feel like it is to reach out to people, in the sense that it's, you're trying to connect in that way, right? Because why else would you share it? You could just leave it in a book and put it on your bed.
Look, I think for some people, absolutely, that connection and to feel part of a conversation, a global conversation, if you like, is certainly part of it. Absolutely. But I do think, and this kind of goes into the psychology of why we do lists about, for example, personal stuff. So less about the things we've consumed and more about the, you know, my best times running or whatever goals you might, weight loss, or I was going to say height goals, but that's probably not something anyone can achieve. But maybe, who knows, if you're going to those weird clinics that are breaking your leg bones. But that aside, have you not heard of these? These
are fascinating. That's another topic we need to talk about.
Yeah, there's these dodgy, you've got to Google it, Warren, okay, but basically they break your calf bone and stretch you. And this costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yeah, anyway.
Does it work? So
that, yeah, but it's a very difficult way to go about making yourself a little bit taller. And they don't do this surgery in Australia, so you've got to go abroad. Anyway, that is
my digress.
I'm just so fascinated because I'm short. So, yes, back to the list. That idea of sharing, you know, weight loss goals or running times, et cetera, or, what, you know, lift weights that you've been able to lift. Part of that is also there's a sense of feeling accountable, or at least this makes you accountable. And this is one of those, you know, psychologists will often say, tell people about your goals because you'll have an internalized feeling like everyone around you is monitoring your progress. They're actually not, but it's a way to trick yourself into thinking like, oh, everyone's watching. I've got to make these, you know, do what I set out to do. So it's a way that if you post your list, it's a way to sort of give what I owe to the community that has been supporting me, even if it's all in your head. And so, again, it doesn't work with film and books, etc., but for other personal goals such as, you know, weight loss or other kinds of things, it might be, you know, the number of words you want to write in a year. This is a way to make yourself feel a bit accountable as well.
We're chatting to Associate Professor Lauren Rosebourne from the University of Melbourne about why we have this need to create end-of-year lists and then publish them and tell everyone about them. Lauren, I wonder how much of it too is about, you know what, the year's gone, 12 months have gone, have I felt productive? I need to write something down to feel like, you know, I've had a bit of a positive year and it's been worthwhile.
Yeah, there is that as well. And I think there is a sense of, you know, again, this is the sort of psychology of it, that sort of, it's a way to document, much like gratitude lists where people who, you know, who are often going through different kinds of mental health challenges are encouraged to write down things you're grateful for. That idea of the year being, okay, well, these are the things, the outcomes that I actually had, so that you don't have that tendency, which I think a lot of us do feel, is that every day has a bit of a sameness feel to it. And it's hard to sort of see progress when you're doing it every day. But that idea of looking back forces you to do that as well. But I think there's also another aspect that's very Australian, or at least very Southern Hemisphere. And I think because we're going into the summertime, or in the summertime now, but going into a lot of, yeah, we're in the middle of a storm at my house, but going into that season where a lot of us have leave, these lists are often also a way to, okay, I'm going to catch up on some reading or television or films. So it's also, there's a sort of positive aspect to it as well, of us being able to realize what were the things we missed that we can use the summertime to catch up on. And that's a very Southern Hemisphere thing, because of course in the Northern Hemisphere it's really only a couple of days that they're celebrating and then they're all back at work. We tend to have a little bit longer, at least a lot of us.
I just wondered, you know, we talked about the fact that people are potentially writing lists so that they can look back and be like, okay, look, I was productive, or, you know, take this time to be like,
I wasn't as much of a loser as I thought.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I made 12
cakes. But I wonder if the reverse of that is also detrimental to the people seeing the list. Like, for example, if, I don't know, I saw someone put a list of all the books they've read, I would be like, oh my gosh, I literally haven't read a single book this year. I was going to swear, I'm very naughty. You know, I haven't done that.
And maybe they feed off that, because it's easy to make someone else feel less, isn't it, by putting yourself.
But it's self-inflicted, right? It's not their fault that they've read those books. But I wonder if psychologically those lists could potentially be detrimental to the people that see them.
Well, this is always the consequence of social media, isn't it? That idea of being exposed to other people's lives and being made to feel like our lives or our achievements or our personal goals were much less successful, or we were much less productive than other people. So, yes, but that sort of FOMO, or that sense of, you know, envy, or however we're describing it, or however we're personally feeling it, that is actually a very common thing across social media. I'm not sure it's more pronounced with lists, but those lists do highlight this is often a way that we do feel bad about ourselves using social media. But the flip side is that there's also positive stuff, in the sense that if you really loved a television show and you see it on a lot of people's lists, you do feel validated that your tastes are actually, oh, I'm in line with the Guardian film critic or whoever it might be. There's a positive there. I think there's also the dopamine hit that people get if people interact with their lists, you know, be it likes, etc. Not the people who are sort of dissing your list, but those who are liking or sharing it. Like a lot of social media interactions does give people a dopamine hit.
Now, I've got to be honest, I'm not a big social media user at all. In fact, I rarely log in. I think Facebook, I've logged in a couple of months ago. I've got to be honest, and I'm sure I'm going to offend everyone here, and I apologize up front, but I don't give a toss about anyone's list. Really, I'm not interested.
It depends the list. I must say I do consult ones for film and TV because I think there's just so much content now. It is impossible to keep on top of everything. And because that's both something I'm interested in but also my area of research, I do use those lists to kind of things that went under the radar that are maybe critically acclaimed. Mm. But they tend to be, though, I must say, I have a sort of skew to either people whose tastes I respect in my friendship circle and lots I don't respect because they watch junk or and things I consider junk, not, you know, there's no scientific junk status, just things that I consider trash, or critics, you know, who it's their job to review content as well.
I suppose there's an academic purpose there too, isn't there?
Yeah, and I guess there's that thing as well because lists, of course, there's nothing science-y about them in the sense it's a subjective list of things you liked or things you did. There's not really, I mean, I suppose outside of, you know, things that are measurable, weight loss or running or words written or whatever it might be, weights lifted, etc. A lot of the pop culture lists are simply things that worked for me, but that's not, you know, there's not really any science behind the fact that, you know, you really like Marvel stuff or you really like horror. So there's a sort of element there of just subjectivity as well.
Well, I can give you a shopping list.
Oh.
That's it.
Is it got Christmas decorations, Christmas tree baubles?
No.
Oh. I suppose it's a bit late to buy baubles.
No, they're half price, aren't they?
Now, so it's perhaps the best time of year.
Saving for next year.
Hot tips, okay. You hear them here first.
I did see, though, in one of the newspapers, this is a sort of weird segue, not to use Christmas ornaments for erotic purposes. It was on the front page of one of
them. Oh, what were people using the baubles?
Well, candy canes. But But the thing is, right, can you not think of anything better? These things are cheaply made. They're going to break. If you're not going to give them to children to play with because they're going to cut themselves, why would you? Oh, no.
No.
I just.
Hello, there's a list for you.
This is it.
Alternative uses for candy canes.
Mind you, every year there are these kind of, these are the lists I actually do, like those sort of medical mishap lists, like how some of the health departments don't stick, you know, icy poles inside yourself, even if it's really hot, because there's medical side effects. It's like, do you need to tell people this stuff? And so, yes, I like those kind of lists. They really appeal to me because it means that people went to the emergency section of a hospital with something that, you know, my nephew who's 2 years old could tell me, not a great idea.
Definitely not. Lauren, it's been great chatting with you throughout the year. Thank you so much for giving up your time every week.
I look forward to doing it next year.
Thank you. It's Associate Professor Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.